Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. It's Emma. Welcome to today's episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast sponsored by Overdrive. In this episode, I sit down and chat with Jill and Joe, and we share all of our favorite royal reads, whether they're based on real people or simply inspired by, all the way from the Tudors to the House of Windsor. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget that you can find us on social media at ProBookNerds. On Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com or go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Happy reading. I feel like we're going to be in a silly, goofy mood again.
I mean, it's afternoon. Yeah.
It's like the afternoon. Monday. Raining on Monday. It's very British weather. So
it, you know what? It is. Also, my cat has decided to join. So that's
meow.
There's a meow.
Free microphone boop.
I've suddenly lost all words and thoughts. But today we're going to talk about royal reads, British royals or otherwise. Although I think most of our picks focus on the various monarchies in Great Britain over the years. So let's dive right in. I was going to try to say something punny and clever with like tea. Alas, not happening. So my first royally read, great use of English there. My first pick is HRH. So Many Thoughts on Royal Style by Elizabeth Holmes. And that's a very casual title, in my opinion, to something that, you know, isn't usually quite formal and regal. And that's because Elizabeth Holmes started the So Many Thoughts on Royal Style on Instagram and did a whole series on their fashion choices and just all of the different thoughts she had on primarily Queen Elizabeth, Diana, Kate, and Meghan. And so the book covers each woman very thoroughly and their evolution and fashion choices. It has lots of really gorgeous images. It obviously ties the fashion choices over the years from the women kind of to each other. So currently, Kate and Meghan, there were a lot of draws to the past inspiration from Diana or Elizabeth in terms of color palettes or jewelry or hats or things like that. And I think that's fascinating that their outfits are so curated and strategic when like most days I throw on like a hoodie and leggings.
Is that a call out for what I'm wearing right now?
No, but it's just like, it's wild that there's so much thought behind what goes into their appearance. And it's like a whole industry. I mean, they'll sell out an item of clothing or a label. They'll produce like, it kind of makes me think of that scene in The Devil Wears Prada where they're talking about like, you know,
Cerulean.
Yeah.
Thank you. I almost said like lapis, which was not right at all. About how just things trickle down. And I think that these four women of the last however many decades have been hugely influential in style in general, not just in England.
Yeah, it's really amazing to consider how they map out every single look, that it started really with Diana as like a PR campaign to make her likable and relatable, and then turned into a marketing strategy. And to have Kate, like all of her outfits, mirror outfits from similar times in Diana's life. And now I saw it on TikTok. There is a company that is recreating some of the iconic sweaters and sweatshirts that Diana wore. So you can have like the same print and whatnot for your own life. And I may or may not be in need of one of those or purchasing one for our inevitable return to the office.
Ah, I would be down with that. And like mm-hmm. the resurgence of like Diana fashion, even now, like the crew neck sweatshirts and bike shorts and mm-hmm. like that mix of casual, but put together, is wild to see that that's what's come back full circle, like, you know, 30 years later. It makes me feel really old that we're seeing yes. things now for the second or third time.
Yes. Because some of those fashion choices, I'm not so sure need to come back. Not like, no, you know, mm-hmm. she's a style icon, but it was that time period of the 80s and 90s. We all made questionable decisions in terms of clothes. And so
some of these things that are being sold in like Urban Outfitters today, I know I wore as like a toddler yeah. or to kindergarten, and all of the heartthrob characters now look like Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I don't know. It's at least the middle part.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's just wild to me that like bike shorts, something mm-hmm. that she wore mm-hmm. that I think was quite controversial for a, you know, a member of the royal family yeah. to have, you know, bike shorts in their repertoire, no matter what the fashion was. And we've come full circle where like, why am I even entertaining the notion of bike shorts? I don't know. And it's because you want to look, you know, like this put together, but casual Diana vibes. And that look is so iconic to her. I think it's fascinating. And circling back to the book, that was HRH, So Many Thoughts on Royal Style by Elizabeth Holmes. We could talk about the clothes, I'm sure, for the entirety of this podcast, but I know we have lots of picks to get through. So why don't I hand it over to one of you for one of your picks?
Sure. My first pick is Elizabeth the Queen by Sally Bettle Smith. And from the moment of her ascension to the throne in 1952, at the age of 25, Queen Elizabeth II has been the object of unparalleled scrutiny. But through the fog of glamour and gossip, how well do we really know the world's most famous monarch? Drawing on numerous interviews and never-before-revealed documents, acclaimed biographer Smith pulls back the curtain and shows in intimate detail the public and private lives of Elizabeth II, who has led her country and Commonwealth through the wars and upheavals of the last 60 years with unparalleled composure, intelligence, and grace. So we meet the young Queen Elizabeth, who suddenly becomes heiress presumptive when her uncle abdicates the throne. Then we meet the 13-year-old Lilibet as she falls in love with a young Navy cadet named Philip and becomes determined to marry him, even though her parents prefer a wealthier English aristocrat. And so we basically just see her in her teenage years repairing army trucks, standing with Winston Churchill on the balcony of Buckingham Palace on VE Day. We see the young queen struggling to balance the demands of her job with the role with her role as the mother of two young children. And then Smith will bring us inside the palace doors and into the queen's daily routines, the red boxes of documents she reviews each day, the weekly meetings she's had with 12 prime ministers, her physically demanding tours abroad, and the constant scrutiny of the press, as well as her personal relationships, Prince Philip, her children, their disastrous marriages, her grandchildren, and her friends. So kind of a lovely piece to kind of look at Queen Elizabeth from the earliest days until more recently. You know, of course, this one doesn't cover the death of Philip.
It's crazy when you think about it that this woman's been in this role as queen for 70 years.
Yeah.
And so to hearken back to like her childhood, like, and then all the different stages of her life and all the different things she's witnessed, like, I think she's probably I don't know, obviously I'm not British, but she's probably like a source of stability and comfort, I think, for people, just in that she's been, you know, mm-hmm. that figure for so long and has spanned so many big world events,
milestones
that I think that's always so interesting to look at her life you know, over the many, many decades that she's performed these duties.
And the people that she's survived, like.
Yeah.
I mean.
Exactly.
So I'm going to go. Speaking, this is actually fashion related, so it sort of works. So my first one is The Gown, a novel of the royal wedding by Jennifer Robeson. So this starts in London, 1947. Besieged by the harshest winter in living memory, burdened by onerous shortages and rationing, the people of post-war Britain are enduring lives of quiet desperation despite their nation's recent victory. Among them are Anne Hughes and Miriam Dassin, embroiderers at the famed Mayfair fashion house of Norman Hartnell. Together, they forge an unlikely friendship, but their nascent hopes for a brighter future are tested when they are chosen for a once-in-a-lifetime honor, taking part in the creation of Princess Elizabeth's wedding gown. Then we have in Toronto 2016, more than half a century later, Heather seeks to unravel the mystery of a set of embroidered flowers, a legacy from her late grandmother. How did her beloved Nan, a woman who never spoke of her old life in Britain, come to possess the priceless embroideries that so closely resemble the motifs on the stunning gown worn by Queen Elizabeth II at her wedding almost 70 years before? And what was her Nan's connection to the celebrated textile artist and Holocaust survivor, Miriam Dassin? So first, I love me some historical fiction that like has two timelines and there's like a connection there. But I think, you know, when you think about like the fashion and especially something like a wedding dress, you know, it reminds me of here in America, like the first ladies at the inaugural ball, like who is the designer? And they like to sometimes pick these like unknown designers. Like, can you imagine? They're like, yeah, we're going to make Queen Elizabeth's wedding dress. Okay. That seems like a big deal. How do we even begin to process that? And yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine the idea of like, oh yeah, these nobodies are, are now responsible for this soon to be iconic piece. It also immediately made me think of seeing Diana's wedding dress in person. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, just to be tasked with a garment that you know just so many eyes are going to be on to like or dislike or critique. Like, I'm sure, I mean, the benefit outweighs maybe the notoriety, but imagine the pressure you would feel in the lead up to, you know, the big reveal of the dress.
Right.
I'm glad you mentioned this book because I forgot to.
I was surprised it was not on your list. I was like, I was expecting it to be on there. So
I know.
I got you.
Because that's teamwork. The thing as well. I love a book about, you know, the real royals, but we also really enjoy and inspired by tale, which is perfect for my next two picks. I'm lumping them together because they're a series. I'm positive I've talked about them at some point on the podcast, but they're just so good. And these books are The Royal We by Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan, and the sequel, The Heir Affair. So these books are not super new. They came out in 2015 and 2020, I think, respectively. But what I do think is fascinating is that The Royal We follows an American girl who goes to Oxford and accidentally falls in love with a prince. And so it was largely inspired by like William and Kate's romance, but it like eerily predicted Meghan and Harry's whole thing. That's fascinating that as fans of the royal family and authors and things like that, that they, I guess, you know, predicted what was to come in this fictional setting. And when I was looking up books for this episode, I was reading an interview that Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan did with Vanity Fair. And I wanted to quote this because I thought it was so good. But Heather says in the interview with Vanity Fair that the royal family is like the world's longest running soap opera. And I thought that was a really good way to describe it, because even from like Henry and all of his like six wives and all of those things, you've had all of these really interesting people through history that are notable in many, many ways. And it does just feel like, you know, love it or not, the world's longest running soap opera family, you know, dynasty drama. And I thought that was just a great way to put it. So while these books are totally fictional and just inspired by, I love a good, you know, American girl becomes a princess, because that was always like the dream, you know, in middle school and high school. Like, obviously, I'm just going to go to England and marry a prince. So yeah, in The Royal We, Bex Porter does just that. And then in the sequel, The Heir Affair, it picks up after they're married and navigating royal life. So lots of calls to real people and real events, but very much takes place in its own world. So again, that is The Royal We and The Heir Affair by Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan. And yeah.
Oh, go well, ahead. I was gonna say, like, no, I think you're right. I like that quote in Vanity Fair, because when you think about the actual family tree, it's long and extensive, and there's just like weird divergence based on royal protocol and the royal line of succession, and it's all kind of bananas.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And even like in like popular culture now, like I'm thinking Bridgerton, you know, where I was Googling, you know, the real Queen Charlotte or the real king, whatever. And you're like, wait, there's so many things that are just fantastical that you can't believe these are real people and these are their real stories. And like, yes, these monarchs had 15 children and then their 15 children had children. And like, it's just, I do think that's why it's fascinating, because there are so many areas there that you can find something that's interesting to you. It's wild. And again, yeah, it's like, it's centuries old. So there's certainly something that appeals. And I think a lot of our picks are set in modern times or pertain to the Windsors, but the Tudors and all the other generations are certainly just as fascinating. So
just by, I have two books about the Tudors on my list. So thanks, Emma. I'm going to jump on in here. People who've listened to this podcast know that I'm like kind of obsessed with the Tudors and love them, and have read many books, fiction and nonfiction. So I have a fiction pick and a nonfiction pick. My fiction pick, okay, it's The Boleyn Inheritance by Philippa Gregory. First, as a full-on disclaimer, I'm well aware that Philippa just like totally makes up history. I know that. So this, I know. But I've talked about the other Boleyn girl multiple times. I don't know if I've ever talked about The Boleyn Inheritance, which comes after that. And it is about, it takes place after the death of Henry's third wife, Jane Seymour, who has the only one to give him a son, but she dies in childbirth. And so the book is about Henry's fourth wife, Anne of Cleves, and his fifth wife, Catherine Howard, who was, Anne came from like what would eventually be Germany, like that kind of area. There was a portrait of her that was sent ahead of time. King Henry's like, yeah, I like her. And then she shows up and he doesn't think she looks anything like the photo, like not photo, portrait, and gets mad. And there's like a situation where she doesn't realize it's him. And it's a big misunderstanding. It's a whole mess. And then Catherine Howard was like a teenager when the very much older King Henry like pursues her while married to Anne of Cleves. And it's, you know, it's Philippa Gregory taking history and doing what she does with it, but it's
she writes them so well, though.
She does write them very well. She like really captures that intrigue and of the court and the dynamics of the relationships. And honestly, of all of the six wives, Anne of Cleves probably got the best deal out of them all. So just saying that. But I really like this because of the wives, I think, you know, Anne is like my favorite next to Anne Boleyn. So like the two Annes, I like the two Annes. And so, yeah. So if you read the other Boleyn girl and you're interested in some of the other wives as told by Philippa Gregory, there's The Boleyn Inheritance. But speaking of the first Anne, my other book is a nonfiction book called The Lady in the Tower. It's by Alison Weir. She is a Tudor historian, English monarchy historian. She's written about others, monarchy families too. But this is the fall of Anne Boleyn. So this is a book that is dedicated to Anne's like the last days of her life, from like how she got to there in the tower, and being beheaded, and spoiler alert, Anne Boleyn was beheaded. but her trial and everything surrounding the trial and how that all came about and her arrest. And especially if you have read The Other Boleyn Girl, there's a subplot involving Anne Boleyn and her brother in The Other Boleyn Girl that's not really based on accuracy to some degree. Like, Anne was totally set up. And so this is a nice sort of counter to that with historical detail about what those last days were like. And, you know, the question of the like men at court who surrounded her and what was really happening there. So yes, Boleyn Inheritance by Philippa Gregory and The Lady in the Tower by Alison Weir are my Tudor picks for this one.
We love a historical spoiler alert.
I'm like, if nobody knows that Anne Boleyn lost her head, there's probably, if by now you are not aware of that,
we can't help you with that now.
We can't help you with that now. Also, I'm pretty sure that Styx is coming to Cleveland here, the Playhouse Square, and I'm so excited about seeing that musical. Yes. Like our coworker Andrea and I were already talking about it because we've also talked about our love for the Tudor. So just if you are in Cleveland, I'm pretty sure Styx is going to be part of the Playhouse Square package. This is recording before they announce, but I'm just putting it out there.
But
anxiously awaiting for the official, yes. Official announcement.
Keep checking my inbox. So I will give my only fiction title to kind of complement Emma and Jill's fiction titles. This one came out just about a year ago in 2021. And this is the new series, Her Majesty the Queen Investigates. This is The Windsor Knot by S.J. Bennett. So had to throw out a little, you know, cozy mystery that the Queen is trying to solve. So it is the early spring of 2015, and Queen Elizabeth is at Windsor Castle in advance of her 90th birthday celebrations, but the preparations are interrupted by the shocking and untimely death of a guest in one of the castle bedrooms. The scene leads some to think the young Russian pianist strangled himself, yet a badly tied knot leads MI5 to suspect foul play. When they begin to question the household's most loyal servants, Her Majesty knows they're looking in the wrong place. For the Queen has been living an extraordinary double life ever since her teenage years as Lilibet. Away from the public eye and unbeknownst to her closest friends and advisors, she has the most brilliant skill for solving crimes. With the help from her assistant private secretary, Rosie Oshodi, a British-Nigerian officer recently appointed to the Royal House Artillery, the Queen discreetly begins making inquiries. As she carries out her royal duties with usual aplomb, no one in the royal household, the government, or the public knows that the resolute Elizabeth won't hesitate to use her keen eye, quick mind, and steady nerve to bring a murderer to justice. So this book does a really great job of capturing Elizabeth's voice and like her nuance and her wit, and it is really charming and imaginative. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm going to say Murder, She Wrote. When won't I take the opportunity to say Murder, She Wrote? But if you wanted to imagine a world where the Queen lives a double life as like a PI, this is for you.
I love that so much. And that reminds me of a different cozy mystery series that I'm frantically looking for. It is Kensington Palace Chef Mystery. It might not be this one, but I know there are several set in, you know, the royal residences mm-hmm. that incorporate the real characters. And I love it.
Yes. It's like fun fan fiction kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Those ones are Kale to the Queen and Lord of the Pies by Nell Hampton. I'm not sure if that's entirely the one I was thinking of, but it'll do.
My favorite. Yep. My favorite genre of cozy mysteries, the food pun related ones.
Yes. Is a food pun that ticks all boxes. It's pouring rain. So apologies if you hear thunderstorm in the background, we have excellent weather for this gloomy Monday. But the next pick that I have, we'll stick with fiction here and fictional accounts, is The Other Windsor Girl by Georgie Lalook. apologies if that's not the correct pronunciation, but this is a historical fiction tale that follows Vera, where her life is sort of mapped out for her. She's going to get married and sort of progress as she would like, living her dream. But her fiance is killed in the war in the 40s. And so her whole entire life plan obviously has gone off track. And she sort of has a chance meeting with Princess Margaret, and her whole life sort of changes. And she becomes one of Princess Margaret's second lady in waiting. And so this is a fictional character with real references to the real Princess Margaret, and sort of imagining what it would be like to be this lady in waiting who is sort of part employee, part confidant, part friend. And this is just a really interesting take on a really notable figure. Princess Margaret did a lot to pave her own path as sort of the sister to the queen. And there have been a lot of different stories about her and, you know, interpretations of her. And I know people are fascinated with her. I think she's a really interesting person that you can kind of still be within the confines of this very like stiff upper lip type of family, but obviously make choices for yourself. So I know that she was really notable and got a lot of notoriety in many ways for just making the decisions that she wanted to make. So that was the other Windsor girl. And I do love when they combine, you know, made up stuff with very real situations and people, and just sort of casting it as if it happened this way. So that is why I really enjoy this.
So I'm going to take a step back and I guess go a little further back in our line here and talk about The Queen Mother by William Shawcross. This is the official and definitive biography of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, the most beloved British monarch of the 20th century, bold claims. So she was the consort of King George VI, mother of Queen Elizabeth II, and grandmother of Prince Charles, Elizabeth Angela Marguerite Bowles Lyon, the ninth of the Earl of Strathmore's 10 children. And she was born August 4th, 1900. Nice and flat on the money there. And certainly no one could have imagined that her long life, she did die in 2002, would come to reflect a changing nation over the course of an entire century. Vividly detailed, written with unrestricted access to her personal papers, letters, and diaries, this is a candid royal biography that is also kind of a singular history of Britain in the 20th century. So, good one if you want to reflect on kind of where the Windsors started, so to speak, with The Queen Mother by William Shawcross.
I feel like The Queen Mother is one of those figures that has always been so interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not in the royal line, you know, but she's yep. so instrumental and was such a powerful like voice and figure within the family when she was alive. Just utterly, utterly fascinated by her.
Absolutely. And the best, you know, me always looking for a pop culture reference, the only good foil I can think of is Maggie Smith as the Dowager Countess in, yes. you know, Downton Abbey. But yeah, truly just to look at her life and see everything spread out across so much time was really fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. So my next one is Royal Sisters by Anne Edwards. This is a nonfiction book about Margaret and Elizabeth, who, you know, these pair of royal sisters had no choice in their historic positions. They were just sort of born into this and into that line. But behind the palace gates and within the all too human confines of their personalities, they displayed tremendous individuality and suffered the usual symptoms of sibling rivalry. And so in her book, Anne Edwards provides an unprecedented and intimate portrait of these most famous siblings during their formative and dramatic youth years. It is also one of the 20th century's most fascinating stories of sisterly loyalty. And it sort of starts, you know, with them when they are younger. I think it goes up through the Townsend affair with Princess Margaret. And again, like with the Queen Mother, And I think, you know, Emma, you just sort of touched on this, like Margaret is one of those, again, like not in the royal line of succession, well, very far down, but like, it's just so, there's so much just sort of on that periphery of the main royal family that is just so interesting.
Right. Cause there's so much emphasis on the line of succession in these families that it makes, you know, any type of sibling or spouse, like it's weird that that would be on the fringe.
Yes.
And it is just because of the way that like emphasis to that direct line of like, it's wild.
It is
where you think of, you know, the mother of the queen or the sister, like those are the fringes. Fascinating that's the dynamic, you know, of the monarchy, and to see something like that, I think in place still.
Yes.
Is where you have lots of good conversations about all of that.
Right. Well, I think like the idea of the heir and the spare, I mean, yeah, because, you know, King Henry was the second son. He was not supposed to be the first one. And then his brother died. And so then you look at, like William and Harry, and now William has kids, and that sort of affects things, but it's just being the sibling of the crowned mm-hmm. royal member, like the royal highness, like that would just, I don't even know like what your relationship with your sibling would look like.
Well, and it's interesting as well. I mean, even if we're not even going that far back, but like Elizabeth and Margaret, had things gone differently, like they were not supposed to be the That's ones yeah. in this position. And so right. like when their father, you know, had to step into that role because his brother abdicated, like, again, you have all of these weird circumstances where you're raised and like taught and prepared for these roles that could, you know, change, even though they try to stick to whatever, but like, here we are, you know, several generations down from that, and just seeing like the lasting effects of those decisions is fascinating.
100%.
While Truly. We are talking about Elizabeth and Margaret, I do have one more pick that specifically talks about them. It is the Windsor Diaries. So these are never before published diaries from, I'm going to struggle with this name, even though I looked up how to pronounce it and my afternoon brain has completely just not helping me here. But this is the Windsor Diaries by Alethea Fitzalan Howard. And this is so interesting because she spent her teenage years living adjacent to Windsor with her relatives. And so she befriended Elizabeth and Margaret when they were princesses during 1940 to 1945. And so the diaries have some unique insight and some, you know, intimate details of her life and her friendships with those two princesses during that time, during wartime Britain. And so what was interesting to me about these diaries is the insight that she gives onto how Elizabeth in particular is already just on her path to being, you know, the monarchy and being the crown, even from a very, very young age. And how, as friends, there would never be anything that the queen needed more from a friendship because of her position. You know, as much as her friends maybe needed her or wanted to have that relationship with her, her priority, at least according to these diaries, was the crown and all of the things that came with that. So these diaries are really interesting. They cover specifically 1940, again, through 1945, but in the foreword of this book, her distant relative who was given all of these diaries said that she wrote a diary for every year of her life. There are 70 diaries, and this was just the part that chronicled her being neighbors with, you know, Princess Margaret and Princess Elizabeth.
Wow. I would love to follow up your Margaret and Elizabeth with my Elizabeth and Margaret. This is Elizabeth and Margaret, The Intimate World of the Windsor Sisters by Andrew Morton. He also wrote Diana, Her True Story, which I believe Emma will be bringing up later.
I wasn't going to, but okay. Yes, read his stuff.
I couldn't remember. So, you know, there you go. Free shout out to Diana, her true story. But this is Elizabeth and Margaret by Andrew Morton. They were the closest of sisters and best of friends. But when in a quixotic twist of fate, their uncle Edward VIII decided to abdicate the throne, the dynamic switches between them dramatically. Forevermore, Margaret would have to curtsy to her sister and bow to her wishes. Elizabeth would always look upon her younger sister's antics with a kind of stoic amusement, but Margaret struggled to find a place and position inside the royal system, and her fraught relationship with its expectations was often a source of tension. Famously, the queen had to inform Margaret that the church and government would not countenance her marrying a divorcee, a group captain Peter Townsend, forcing Margaret to choose between keeping her title and royal allowances or divorcee lover. From the idol of their cloistered early life through their hidden wartime lives into the divergent paths they took following their father's death and Elizabeth's ascension to the throne, this book explores their relationship over the years. So Morton's latest biography offers unique insight into these two drastically different sisters, one resigned to duty, like Emma just mentioned with her last book, and the other resistant to it, and the lasting impact they have had on the crown, the royal family, and the ways it has adapted to changing over, you know, and into the 20th century. So a kind of solid follow-up for your last pick, Emma. And that was Elizabeth and Margaret by Andrew Morton. And also remember, shout out to his other work, Diana, Her True Story.
I think what you like the Townsend thing, and you see it a little bit with Harry and Meghan, and you know, the abdicate, like this idea of there being, I mean, even Camilla, like this idea of being like unsuitable partners for the crowned or presumptive heir, and who goes for it and who's like makes a different choice and decides not to, like that I think is so interesting to witness, and just how different decisions are made depending on the royal person making that choice.
Yeah, and even like Prince Philip was not the choice,
right?
You know, but then he was a crucial part of the monarchy and like their marriage for decades and decades, and like, so it is interesting how things change over time, but then also how little they change, right, as well.
Yeah, for sure. So my next one is In Waiting by Anne Glenconner. Anne was at the center of the royal circle from childhood. She is the firstborn child of the 5th Earl of Leicester, but because she is a girl, she was deemed the greatest disappointment and unable to inherit. That has changed though, right? Because Charlotte's in line. I think that's changed. But she, because of that royal connection, she became a lady in waiting to Princess Margaret until her death in 2002, and was just like a witness to all of these landmark moments in history that we've been talking about, and kind of gives that sort of intimate look at the family and the life from this position of to them, but not being in direct family member, which I think is sort of a unique look at things.
I think it's so fascinating. I mean, and there's so many different angles of all of these different people. Oh my, we could go on and on and on and on. I will take us to 2020 with my last pick, Finding Freedom by Omid Scobie and Carolyn Durand. This is the, I guess, unofficial, official true story of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. They're not allowed to like officially authorize a book, but I think this is as close as they got, given the authors of this book. They're two top royal reporters who were pretty much on the scene from when Harry and Meghan met. There are a lot of, I guess what I would consider like private details in this book. So I would imagine there had to be some type of consultation with them or with their people to know like the context of their first date, their conversations and things like that. But Finding Freedom just talks about how a English prince fell in love with an American actress and the sort of like sensation that they became when that news broke, and then sort of followed their subsequent love story. And they're certainly interesting figures. I mean, in our current day and age, where they're just absolutely not, you know, conforming to the roles that they were supposed to be in, as, you know, since this book came out. And I think they added some additional content to the ebook of this that touches on this, but, you know, walking away from their royal titles, you know, a couple of years after they got married, and all of the attention that was upon them with the birth of their son, and then their daughter, and just all of the scrutiny. I think that they're really fascinating people who walked away from that monarchy. And I mean, those things are still playing out. So I'm sure we will continue to see books on Harry and Meghan, and not only on their love story, but on their impact on, you know, the House of Windsor and how people look at the royal family. And we may have even further insight when his like tell-all book comes out, supposedly later this year. So I'm really interested to see. I know the Oprah interview that they did, my like mouth was hanging open the whole time, because they were finally putting to words things that have been like swirling around in books and in unauthorized like biographies and think pieces and stuff on the royal family. And so, yeah, this is just a really interesting story. It really does chronicle their, you know, meeting, their first date, their engagement, you know, the wedding and things like that. So if you're interested in Where It All Began for Harry and Meghan in the closest official account or unofficial account, I think we'll get, it's Finding Freedom by Omid Scobie and Carolyn Durand. And I should have said that the subtitle on this was Harry and Meghan and the Making of a Modern Royal Family, which I think is really fascinating, because I would consider them a modern royal family, even though they walked away from their official royal duties and all of. And another interesting point, though, is like, what does that mean? He's still a prince. So they've sort of stepped away from their, you know, formal titles and patronages and official duties, but he is ultimately still the grandson of the queen. And so again, like, I think a theme that we've brought up through all of these picks is that it's just absolutely fascinating the way that that plays on the family dynamic.
It's so fascinating, that Oprah interview, also the thought that like Tyler Perry provided them his own personal security so that they were safe, and he's like, they stayed with like in Tyler Perry's estates, like
it's wild.
I forgot about the Tyler Perry part. Yep.
I will never forget that. I will never forget that. So before I give my last title, I want to sneak in a second last title that I forgot to mention with my last one. This is 99 Glimpses of Princess Margaret by Craig Brown, because it's super important to remember the, you know, just like awesome person she is. She made John Lennon blush and Marlon Brando tongue-tied. She iced out Princess Diana and humiliated Elizabeth Taylor. Andy Warhol photographed her. Jack Nicholson offered her cocaine. Gore Vidal revered her. Francis Bacon heckled her. Peter Sellers was madly in love with her. And for Pablo Picasso, she was the object of sexual fantasy. Like, this book talks it all. It combines interviews, parodies, dreams, parallel lives, diaries, announcement lists, catalogs, and essays. So that really long extended shout out is the 99 Glimpses of Princess Margaret by Craig Brown. But I wanted to wrap it up with a person who I'm surprised I'd pick to talk about, but I figured no one else would, because, you know, who really thinks to do? This is The Duke by Ian Lloyd, and it talks about Prince Philip. And it was even updated, or it has an updated final chapter, including his funeral. So for 7 decades, the Duke of Edinburgh was the Queen's strength and stay, far surpassing the predictions of courtiers who had feared a foreign interloper out for the goodies. Journalists continuously portrayed him as a bluff and gaffe prone, yet the letters he wrote in private showed he had a kind and sensitive side. So it draws on extensive interviews from the people who knew him best. The Duke reveals the man in all his endlessly fascinating contradictions. While tracing his characteristic self-reliance back to a difficult childhood and 6 years war service, Ian Lloyd highlights some rare aspects of the royal consort's personality, from his fondness for Duke Ellington to his fascination with UFOs. So the result is a portrait like no other and a rich tribute to Prince Philip's remarkable life and legacy. Of course, like I mentioned, with that updated final chapter on his funeral and the future of the monarchy without him. And that is The Duke by Ian Lloyd.
Prince Philip was into UFOs.
Prince Philip was into UFOs.
I'm just like imagining him listening. What's that late night radio show where people like call
it? Yes. I wonder how many times he called Miss Cleo. but right, he's just like, I'm now imagining him asking, like, Harry, could you show me how to download podcasts again? Right. I want to listen to that alien one I like.
Was he a fan of the X-Files, I wonder? Probably. Okay.
That's you better believe it. You better believe it. I'm putting that into my brain that he was.
He was. Okay, so my last one. This is... I love that I'm, yeah, because this is like so out of the world in a really great way. This is actually it's fiction. It is a novel. It is a historical reimagining. So it's like an alternative history that imagines what would happen if the War of the Roses never happened. And so if the Yorks and the Lancasters did not come together and the conflict between the South and north of England continued. And so this is about the sort of takes place around now. And it's about Arthur, the Prince of Wales, in this book. And he's found himself in need of an heir. And to do that, he, of course, needs to find a wife. He is part of the Lancaster family. And at an event, he meets Amelia, who is part of the Yorkish side. She's the daughter of a Yorkish heir, Earl. And they, you know, come together. And Arthur is like, this is great. Maybe if I marry this woman, it'll sort of unify the country in the way that did not happen in this story, but actually happened in real life many, many years ago. But of course, Amelia is not really part of the royal family. And so it's sort of that commoner idea of like having to learn how to be a princess. And then they have to convince the entire country that this is a good thing for him to marry this, you know, quote unquote, unsuitable person from York. And it's a romance and we love to see it. And again, I think it's just, I had to bring it something a little bit different. Little bit different. So we have this historical alternative history. If you want something to see what would happen if the War of the Roses just didn't happen or was not resolved and they're still fighting all these years later.
Love it. I said it before. I love that the genre of royals just truly lets us publish fan fiction in real life. Like the idea of this alternate universe and yeah.
Although it occurs to me, I don't think I actually gave the title. So the title is A Queen from the North by Erin McCrae and Racheline Maltese. So, and it also has like a pretty cover that uses the red and white roses of the Yorks and the Lancasters.
That pick reminds me of one that I'll just give a brief shout out to because I didn't have that on my list originally, but it's the American Royals series by Catherine McGee. That's a YA sort of romance that it reimagines what would happen if the United States had its own royal family, starting with George Washington after the Revolutionary War. And there was the House of Washington. So I know that series is still going. The newest one, Rivals, American Royals 3, will be out at the end of May this year. So I love that that's reimagined. What if America did have its own royal family? So yeah, shout out to the alternate histories and basically royal fan fiction.
It is. It's fun to think about, though, you know, like, what would America be? And I know my sister loves those books, too. So
they're so good.
Love the thought of that.
I know. I think I love it in theory, but I'm glad we don't have one in practice.
Agreed.
Agreed. Agreed.
But still harkens back to that, like, middle school fantasy of, like, the Princess Diaries. Like, oh, surprise, you're a princess.
But, I want to marry a royal.
Yeah.
Guess I'll just reread Red, White, and Royal Blue.
I know. I was like, we can all dream. I'm already married. Like,
that's so good. Hey, I mean, like, yeah.
So, well, you both can live through my hopes. I'm gonna find a royal. Maybe I'll be the Prince of Monaco.
I mean, there are still several royal families still out there.
There are.
But yes, if you would like to just read about them or things inspired by them, we hope you enjoyed this episode and this very diverse selection of royal reads. We hope you enjoy it. Happy listening and happy reading.
Happy reading.
Bye, everybody.
Why did I wave?
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcast.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer, Jill Grunewald, and Joe Skelly, and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.